Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Monday, the 24th of October, recording at 7:40 p.m. British Summer Time. Okay, first the highlights. Asian stock market's a bit soft, but Europe strong in here today. And the United States, most importantly, is showing a pretty good rally in here today, up over 1% across the board, at least as far as the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ are concerned. That's important. I'll come back to that in a moment. Other highlights? Precious metals sold off in the morning, but picked up in the afternoon as the dollar softened a little bit. Mixed picture there, but well above the day's lows. And that's pretty much it in terms of highlights. So let me go back to these stock markets here. And the big question, of course, is have we seen just a short-term selling squall similar to what occurred in March and the early part of April? Or was it the beginning of something considerably bigger? And no one really knows the answer to that in advance. We have our hopes and fears and expectations. But what counts, as far as I'm concerned, is the technical action. Now, last week we had a good upward dynamic on Wall Street. I think it was on, was it on Wednesday? If it wasn't on Wednesday, it was on Thursday. Next day, it nearly canceled that move out. And I mentioned that we would need to see more in the way of upward dynamics, which is what we had in the sort of early to mid part of April. And today, it looks like we're doing just exactly that. Certainly, if we close anywhere near today's levels, let alone higher, and the Dow is currently up 121, the S&P 500 nearly 15, and the NASDAQ comp up 21. Hold those gains, or as I say, better, and that will be another very clear upward dynamic and add credence to the fact that the market is building another floor down here at these levels and would therefore be capable of rallying back up to the higher side of this year's trading range in the United States. Now, if that happens, that will be hugely significant as far as other markets around the world are concerned, because they have also been in retreat. Just about everything has had a reaction. But some of the markets that have been very good performers in recent years, but had fallen quite sharply, I'm thinking of things like India, and more on that in a moment, I think would rally back up to their highs and more against that background. Japan would probably go through to a new high against that background of a steady Wall Street. In other words, the Wall Street leash, is it still retracting? Well, as of the last week, Wall Street was stabilizing. Remember, I've said all along, if Wall Street is steady, let alone rising, then the leash is loosened, and markets that have good fundamentals or are perceived to have the same will be able to run, or fashionable for whatever other reason, will run on the upside. Conversely, if Wall Street is weak, the weaker Wall Street becomes, the more likely that leash is going to be reined in and other markets will fall quite sharply. Why will that be? People, you know, are always talking about uncoupling. You get people are, and what do they really mean by uncoupling? People have said, well, look, Wall Street's been flat all year, but Europe did reasonably well, not to mention what some of the natural resources markets did. And that's absolutely true. That's why I talk in terms of the leash effect. But if Wall Street takes serious fright, remember, a great deal of the financial firepower that's been fueling other markets around the world has come from the United States and also Europe, and the European markets pretty well move in line as high beta versions of Wall Street. Okay, and just to make that a hold up, you look at the chart of the S&P 500 index, for instance, in this year, and you'll see that that did have gradually higher highs within the year's trading range. No real follow through on the upside, whereas Europe did much better. The Dow, on the other hand, had been relatively flat. But pick your index. Utilities were quite good until beginning of this month. Okay, but they too have steadied. Have a look in the interesting charts, in the interesting charts section. I still don't think we have the conditions here for Wall Street to do anything meaningful on the upside, but just regaining the upper side of this year's boundaries by the NASDAQ, the S&P, and the Dow would be very, very important in my view, and as I say, create a fair environment, favorable environment for some brisk year-end rallies in a number of other stock markets around the world. Now, against that background, my shorts that I increased, I think it was on Friday, my hedge shorts, my asymmetrical hedge shorts in the DAX and SMI, certainly don't look very clever, but those are not big positions, and I did want some downside protection in here, as you know, and we're not out of the woods yet, to coin a phrase. Okay, now what about India? Because I mentioned in the comment of the day that I would say a little bit more about India in terms of timing, and I did this in the Friday Big Picture audio, but I'm going to repeat it. Subject to what I've just said about Wall Street, again, if you're optimistic about Wall Street, then India is a buy in here right now. India is a little bit more expensive than the other Asian markets, but India is the big story, the big fashion story I really do feel for the next many, many years. Now, I've written reams on India and I've posted a great deal on India, so I won't go in and explain all that again here. You can find endless reports on India by using the search engine on the site. I'm addressing that comment really at new subscribers, and I've got more things to post on India. So my feeling is, relative to other markets around the world, that India ran ahead of itself a little bit too much. That was not, for me, a sign to close out investment positions. If I'd just been dealing with leveraged futures positions, and then I certainly would have come out, as India predictably lost upside momentum in the beginning of this month or slightly earlier. But what my strategy overall is to hold on to India, unless I think we're due for a really serious rout in global markets, and I hadn't pressed that panic button yet. And so I want to hold on. It's a core investment position in my portfolio. And earlier in the year, if you have been listening to these audios, I'd sort of debated whether or not India was running ahead too quickly and should I take some of it out, and said, no, this really is the big story. As I have said over and over again, India is very much my favorite stock market for the very long term. And it's certainly benefiting from the superpower story and disillusion with China, emerging superpower story. And I've emphasized the point that India is unprecedented in being the first emerging market to really develop on brain power, even more than brawn or muscle power. So it's not just manufacturing; it's some quite significant high-tech industries. Also, India is developing its own country's important leaders. We see a lot less of that than in China. And as a democracy, well, we've got a better chance of seeing our shareholder rights protected there. So those are some of the themes, and there are many more in the reports that you've seen on India. Now, I've been playing this entirely through the J.P. Morgan Fleming India Trust, and there are other Indian funds which are listed in the chart library, and all of those, I think, are good ways to play India if you're not actually dealing in the individual shares themselves. I prefer the funds. I'm absolutely delighted with the J.P. Morgan Fleming India Trust. And I've said that I only want to buy that after pullbacks. I could justify buying it in here today. I'm not, because I'd have to sell something out of my investment portfolio, and I'm quite happy to hold everything that I have in that portfolio at this particular time. But I am saying that India's come back enough now. That doesn't mean it can't come back further, but where I never want to pay new highs for a market that's running strongly, and following shakeouts, yes, then it's a reasonable proposition. Okay. Now, what I also wanted to discuss was, and I might as well just pick this up right now, that rather good report by Paul Kasriel, I think his name is pronounced, of the Northern Trust Company, No Way Out for the Fed. And I think what we're really going to see is, I partially said, and you've heard me on this theme before, is that the Fed will always err on the side of inflation. Sure, it's raising interest rates right now because it wants to head off some of that short-term inflation. It wants to be seen to be doing a responsible job. But the moment the economy, U.S. economy, got in any trouble whatsoever, the Fed would be slashing rates in a hurry. And also, I think it's been keeping the liquidity quite high in the economy because while it wants to slow bubbles, and I'm thinking mainly now the property bubble, it does not want to create a rout, let alone a Japanese-style deflationary decade or more. So the Fed is to say, we'll err on the side of excess liquidity. Those or that policy has really seeded the next inflationary cycle. I've been banging on about that for the better part of 3 years, and people have been quite derisory about inflation risk, saying, there's no inflation whatsoever. Well, it's all around you if you look for it, and you don't have to look very hard or very far either because it's in most of your household bills. And we have seen in recent weeks that a number of other people have reached the point where they can no longer deny that the inflation is actually there. Now we see the inflation least of all in manufactured consumer goods and in wages. So there are always areas that do lag, and prices of some manufactured consumer goods could even stay in a disinflationary or deflationary environment. And so there may well be pockets of that over a long time period. But new inflationary cycles tend to build gradually. Cost pressures begin to build up. This one's been led by resources and some of the asset markets, as you have certainly seen, and I expect that trend to actually continue. Let's get back to the Fed and the Northern Rock, Northern Trust Company, rather. I think Northern Rock, that's a part of Australia, Sydney, isn't it? Or a restaurant there. Well, I'm digressing. Back to the task at hand here. We're going to see an environment where I think growth tends to be in the United States relatively moderate, and then from time to time we will have stagflation. I think that's also a recipe for Europe and the UK, and not that attractive. Thus, the far more attractive environment in emerging markets. That's where the real growth will occur. Now, that doesn't mean that corporate profits won't do quite well, and we've seen them do quite well recently. But certainly, as the economy slows down and experiences more stagflation, then those corporate profits are likely, well, certainly the their rate of increase will be dented. That's not a hugely attractive overall environment for equities. So I think you'll see Wall Street mainly in a trading range, as I've said before. And that then becomes a share pickers market or a special situations market. Whereas other markets around the world, not least in the resources field and fashionable good story emerging markets, with India at the head of that group, can do exceptionally well. And the only real exceptions to that are when we get the sharper shakeouts on Wall Street. And I'm talking about the next 10 to 15 years or even more. Okay, moving on. Government bonds, don't like them. If the stock market sells off, they'll rally up a bit further, but they are nearing top formation completion in here. And when you get a day like today, with Wall Street showing 1% gains or better, then the U.S. bond market is getting clipped down 21:30 seconds in here today. Currencies, this dollar index, still pretty firm in here. People banking on the Fed raising interest rates further. This is a well-known story. And we are seeing the dollar, of course, but we are still seeing the dollar index press up against that 90 level. It's actually a little bit above it, closed above it on Thursday, or most of us edging up, I think, by late last week. And it's still above it, just dollars down a little bit in here today, but nothing significant. It was starting to weaken a bit more earlier, and that pushed gold from $3 on the downside to a couple of dollars on the upside, but then gold slipped back a bit, and spot gold bullion is down 155 on the day, but still consolidating in here, 465. Now remember, you know how bullish I am of gold, and taking I hold that view on a short, medium term, and long term view. In the short term, you'd say, well, come on, David, what's happened in the last 3 weeks here? It's just come off a bit and ranging around. It's consolidating. And gold still in this early stage, I think we're only in the very early stage of the second psychological perception stage of its bull market. It will spend far more time ranging than actually trending. But it hasn't come off very much, and I don't think it will come off very much, despite some big bear calls out there. Well, we've seen those all along, haven't we? That's a good sign. You don't want everybody talking about gold moving to $1,000 or whatever. So the more people who are dismissive of gold or say that the top is in, and as I say, we've heard that on numerous occasions in recent years. I don't believe any of it, but if you want a real jury on that, go look at the charts of gold in various different currencies. Owen added a whole lot more of them to the subscribers chart library. Look at the long-term picture on those charts. In other words, the point and figure or the weekly candlestick, and the evidence is compelling that gold is in a secular bull market. So I don't expect gold to come down very much. I think it's a buy in here at these levels. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see it test and break up above the $500 level. It could easily do it, during the remainder of this year or early in the new year. But it's going to do it at a step at a time at this stage of its cycle. Obviously, I like silver a lot. That's my biggest speculative position, although I've got quite a good speculative position in gold. But I prefer silver for its volatility. And there's an even bigger scarcity factor developing there. And I've also got platinum, which is pretty steady in here overall. Well, it was unchanged on the day. Okay, last but not least, there's palladium, the lager. That's the only one that I don't own at this particular time, but it's cheap. And industrial metals, well, look at that article on China and the building boom. It's a pretty good article. And to me, I don't see really the industrial metals staying down for long, with the exceptions being that where we had seen explosive rallies in, say, 2003 for nickel, for instance, just a big accelerating upward trend, well, then that necessitates a 2 or 3 year consolidation. The other advances in metals, while powerful, were more measured. And it's a volatile sector still, but a lot of people have been saying sell industrial resources. And most of them have remained pretty firm in here, as you know. And when that nickel, which is getting back to an interesting area, around $12,000 contract right now, when that does start to pick up again, may well be significant for the entire sector. But we have a secular bull market in those industrial metals. So I continue to really like the shares, particularly shares such as Rio Tinto and BHP Billiton, and they had run ahead of themselves. They've had a good shakeout this month, and I regard them as being in buying ranges here as well. What else to mention to you? Oil still consolidating. I've described this over the last month or more as a medium-term consolidation that we're seeing. Oil still soft on the charts, dipped back under the $60 level here today, got down to 59.30, but couldn't hold it. Back at 60.32. Natural gas spot, that's November, hovering around the $13 level, but it had dipped down to 12.59 earlier on in the day. But these are in secular bull markets as well, albeit taking breathers right now after their good earlier gains. So I do like this sector and some of those oil shares. I think the Investec funds, and they're, again, I've always said only buy them after a pullback. We've seen a pullback, and that doesn't mean we can't get a little bit more of a pullback, but again, I'm making the point, in a secular bull market, one wants to be buying on the pullbacks. And then shares that I really do like, individual shares. Well, I prefer Investec to the individual shares, which is why I converted my BP not too long ago, as you may recall, into the Investec position. Well, BP's lower today than where I sold it, and the Investec Global Energy Fund's higher. So I think it bears out my point. I'm sure Jonathan Guinness can manage an oil share portfolio better than I can, but I hope to, as a global strategist, to be able to see these big themes and to pass them on to you. And folks, I think that's pretty much a wrap. So I'll just say all the best in all your endeavors. Until tomorrow.